Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World According to Velvet. This is Velvet reporting live from planet Earth. And we have our special but repeated guest, Robert Fitzgerald, the theoretical astrologer. And he is here to talk to us today about the holographic universe and the zodiac. So, Robert, where do you want to start?
Well, this will be a continuation a little bit. Last time I talked about the possibility that astrology actually describes a string theory, multidimensional universe, where we have three physical spatial dimensions, three emotional spatial dimensions, and three mental spatial dimensions, the emotional and mental, giving rise to or supporting gods and goddesses in various ways, and the universal mind, that kind of stuff. So what happens then when, say, like in a multidimensional universe, the mother and father dimension, somehow they want to create like a small physical universe within the nest of their much larger, the megaverse, so to speak. So how this is done, according to astrology, as far as I can see, and this is my own theory again, is that it's done in terms of holographic universe theory. A holographic, you create a holographic image by taking a light, you split the beam in half. One half of the beam is mirrored off at a 90-degree angle to the first beam, and the first beam goes straight on down. So what happens then is that the first beam, the one that goes straight through this semi-opaque mirror, is run through a prism. It's separated out into its bandwidth, and it continues down and it surrounds an object, a real, say, reality. Then at the other end of that, oh, it's a larger mirror, it's mirrored, all that information, that light's mirrored back towards where the second beam has gone. Anyway, in this whole process, you end up with, if you've been to Disney World, any of that stuff, a fuzzy holographic image of, say, this this reality or this real object or whatever is going on. That type of holography also is shown in the Star Wars movie at the beginning when R2-D2 created a holographic image of Princess Leia. Anyway, these types of images, if a holographic universe is real, and it actually fits physicist David Bohm's idea of a holographic universe, which implies that we exist in a universe that is Maya or dream time, that is a replication of a reality that exists outside the universe. So how do we create a universe that or a holographic image that is solid, living, breathing, moving, interactive, such as the knock on wood or the knock on the nearest thing around you, like the universe that we have in front of us, where we love each other and we live our lives in certain ways and embrace challenges and celebrate successes. We do this because actually the zodiac itself is a prime mechanism for this type of holographic creation. So imagine in front of you a circle. From the top, from beyond the top of the circle, a beam of light comes down. And that beam of light carries reality already within it from the emotional dimensions and the mental dimensions. All of this stuff, it's all carried within it. As it gets down to the boundary where this new young physical universe is going to be created, the light is split again between father beam and mother beam. This is where we can then apply the idea of a goddess of creation or a god of creation. Excuse me. So the beam then, the mother beam, is split off at a 90-degree angle from the father beam, And I would say it's split off in both directions. We're talking about a flat graph of the thing here rather than a three-dimensional image. It could very well be, yes. So anyway, we're going to talk in two dimensions just for the sake of understanding this, or putting it out on paper, so to speak. So that the mother beam split off in both directions, and at each of the circle where this universe is created, that's a zodiacal circle, and within that circle there are 12 windows, 12 animating windows. These are the signs, the animal signs or the animating signs that give us life within creation. So this mother beam, as it goes out, it changes direction with every single sign, so that in a sense, the beam comes all the way around to the bottom of the circle. Now at each of the 12 different windows, six on one side, six on the other, 1/12 of the mother beam is mirrored in through this astrological window, say Capricorn, Aquarius, Sagittarius, Pisces, etc. And as this light is beamed into it, carrying with it still the reality of divinity, it's diffused. These windows probably, we might say that they act like prisms. They're spread out and they're enlivened with the qualities of each of these different windows. So as the light comes down to the bottom, you have this, at each window, a certain amount of light is coming through this prism, this window prism, and is being animated by each of these 12 areas of life that we call, that correspond to the astrological signs. When this light comes through these windows, it's spread out and it goes all the way across the zodiac everywhere. It's not in a straight beam anymore because it's being separated out into a prism. So it interacts with every other beam of light coming through every other single window. Now at the bottom, the lights meet and you have the last 12th of, say, on one side and the other side, the last beams. They're all mirrored up through the bottom two signs, Cancer and Leo. We're talking about an Aries ascendant zodiac here. I mean a Taurus ascendant zodiac. Okay. So the bottom two signs are Cancer and Leo. And it goes through that sign. Then you get, with Cancer, you get like all of the energies for goddess worship, worshiping the moon, Cancer moon, all of that stuff. And up through the Leo window, you have all of the solar worship types of energies. God the Father, the warrior hero, and all of these types of things that relate back to either matriarchal or patriarchal religions. Now, the father beam continues at the top, continues down through the exact center of the zodiac. When you have Taurus rising, the planetary rulers of each planet align in a perfectly straight vertical axis down the center of the circle. This axis is the mythic axis mundi, sacred to all mythologies. It's the tree of life. It's the world mountain. It's the navel of the universe. All of these different images that talk about the creative principle within the circle of creation itself. So as this father beam comes down this center, it hits seven different creative centers along this axis. The top center corresponds, from our solar system perspective, with the planet Saturn, the father god image in Greek mythology. Now, 1/7 of the light from the father image hits that center, and it radiates out from that center, interacting with the mother light that are coming in from the edge. You go down below that, you have Jupiter, which rules Pisces and Sagittarius. 1/7 of the light hits that projection center, this universal chakra projector center, and those lights go out and they interact all the way down to Mercury. Then at the bottom, you do not have the sun in line sitting over the moon. The sun and the moon sit side by side in equality with each other. The moon rules Cancer, the sun rules Leo. There is no hierarchy at this bottom level. The father being comes down and enlivens the moon and the sun, and it mixes with the mother energy, Cancer and Leo. This bottom energy, well, as these energies go out, they create what's called moire patterns, circular ring patterns of pure existence and potential. Now, in holography, a third beam of light is required, and once it shines on any one little piece of reality, the entirety of reality just automatically and magically pops up before you. Okay? So, in this structure, within this mechanism then, sun and moon, Cancer and Leo, they would symbolize in mythology the first couple, first woman and first man, Eve and Adam, whatever else you want to call them, the cosmic twins. They are the level from which all of humanity arises from, men and women, yin and yang, all of that stuff. Within this process, within the human condition, within the human heart and the human mind, we embody a light of our own. These seven projector centers in this universal creation correspond very directly with the seven chakras in our own body. So that as we embrace our own spirituality and enliven our chakras, we are also enlivening these projector centers in this mythic universal structure. There's no separation. Now, what happens then with this idea of like when the mother and father light combine with each other again as Cancer Leo, moon sun, there's that, that's where the third light of humanity, actual manifested creation, life, comes from. Then what happens is like life in that sense, they shoot back up this axis, the third beam of light required for actual manifestation of reality, of the universe, of Maya, of this dream time. And as it hits each of these seven projectors and spreads out and it shines on this moire pattern, the universe is automatically created in front of us. Okay, so basically what we have here is that we are the co-creators with God, and this is an integral part of a holographic universe theory. We are co-creators. Our consciousness works with universal consciousness, both mother and father, both zodiac and central axis, to create what we see around us. Now, Velvet teaches here at her center a form of meditation called Kundalini meditation, Kundalini yoga. Yeah. And it is a meditation. It's a very complete process, but what it does is it works on those very chakra centers that lie within our bodies that are actually projector centers for reality around us. What that means is that as we become this, the third light and the co-creators with Source, with Mother, Father, we work on ourselves in such a way that we can start to create a more complete and more loving universe around us. Right now, we are projecting from the bottom two, perhaps even three chakras. what we are projecting from the first two chakras, sun and moon, is total total duality. It is aggression versus survival. And the universe we created us around us, and we look out there into the world all around us, that exists everywhere. Wars, fighting for food, for water, whatever it is, so that we can survive in the cancer sense, and to try to control the world around us in a Leo sense. The third chakra, which is Mercury's chakra, which is about a hand width above the navel, deals with unity within duality, because Mercury rules duality and division. We are dealing with the idea of gods versus goddess, or Yahweh versus Allah, and all of these ideas of, say, spirituality and reality that are ideologically in conflict with each other. What we are in the process now of doing in this paradigm shift is to try to get to our heart chakra. When we get up there, which is the heart chakra, is ruled by Venus in this astrological structure. As we get to Venus, which is prosperity, happiness, love, joy, when we start to open that up, we will create a different world around us. What's happening is, as we project out very easily from our bottom two or three chakras, we project a universe that is dualistic, that is aggressive and survival-oriented. The higher chakras we're not really projecting out of, because in Kundalini yoga and Kundalini meditation, it's taught that these higher chakras are muddy. The light comes up to them, they can't project out. So we're not projecting the higher potential of our birthright.
The guy who brought Kundalini yoga to the United States talked about how the diaphragm is like the mantle of the earth, and it is the hardest, or not the hardest, I mean, the whole purpose of Kundalini yoga is to pierce the diaphragm to bring the consciousness out of the lower triangle up to the higher triangle. And so every kriya, which is a series of movements that we do prior to meditation, every one of them is about moving that energy from the lower triangle up to the heart and above. And so, yeah, because if the heart is closed or shut down, the energy isn't going to come up through the mantle. So the diaphragm is sort of the key, and I don't know how that fits into your structure.
Well, probably very well, because very nicely, because our human body, we embody this axis mundi, this creative axis. It's mythological, it's universal, it's spiritual, as well as just being physical. So in a sense, that line makes a lot of sense. And as we work our way through it with the meditation you're teaching, I do TM and other things, stretching, yoga, all of this other stuff working together, as well as working with crystals and rocks, things that you know a lot about, and I learn a lot from you on that. I'm working to get my energy up to my heart. But what it said in the Orient, in India especially, when you get to the heart chakra, you will be able to manifest your desires with but a thought very easily. The duality, the battle duality between aggression and survival, between pushing against something and defending against it, it will no longer be there. If you want the drama of creating an empire, you can still have that, because then the bottom two chakras will still be projecting a world around you, but it'll more likely be kind of like, say, a Disney ride, where, oh, that was fun, let's get off now and let's go try a different ride. Oh, I'm tired, let's go have lunch. It no longer becomes a question of life or death as much as enjoying life, all of life, the drama of life as well as the romance of life, and the even the romantic comedy of life. So which is the potential for the heart center. So as we do this, then we project, we clean up through our different meditations, we polish and clean off the dirt off of the lens of the fourth heart chakra so that more light is shed out there. And when it hits this moray pattern, the universe changes around us. Those who still want to hang into the lower chakras will have their universe of aggression and survival, and those who make the transition will have a universe of love and peace and joy. And it won't necessarily be a boring situation. It'll be something that we probably can't even begin to imagine now. I'm still using words about heart and love and stuff like that based from my survival aggression perspective. I know I can see what's coming. Haven't been there yet, but I'm going to get there. So that's how we're doing with, that's what we're dealing with this. So, and that's astrology. So that in all of this stuff then, if you go to an astrologer to find out what your chart is, your personality profile, it can give you strengths and it can tell you what your challenges are so that you can deal with them more effectively. Hopefully you can start to deal with them in a creative way as well as a loving, self-loving way, all of this other stuff. That's one aspect of this stuff. The other aspect of this is to, like, if you're close, talk to Velvet and start taking Kundalini yoga classes with her. Work with other people. If you have groups of people where you're at, meditate with them. But what you do in this case then is that you sit and you meditate, and a lot of that meditation then from this holographic projection is to quiet the third chakra mind so that you can open up to the fourth chakra wisdom. Because 60% of the cells in your heart are neural cells. They're mind cells. The heart has its own wisdom and its own emotional thinking ability. So if you get out of Mercury or you add to Mercury, the heart sense of loving wisdom, of forgiveness, of not taking on yourself the drama of life or death, of defensiveness and aggression and everything you see in the world around you, and become much more loving and, say, forgiving in the Christ sense, in the Buddha sense, even in the Mohammedan sense before, you know, without the, you know, the jihad and all of that other stuff, because Islam means peace. Once you get to that center of peace, then things start to change dramatically. You can actually change the world around you by looking at it from the heart rather than from your lower chakras. That's the promise of this type of an approach. So.
Well, and that fits right in. You know, there was Drumbelow. He always talked about how when we try to manifest with our mind, we manifest for ourselves, but there's an opposite for others. So, like, if you want to be rich, then somebody is going to be poor. But when you manifest from your heart, you manifest for the collective. And so that helps me understand, Robert, how that happens. Because you're talking about the third chakra mind, which would be the egoic mind, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And so the other thing that seems tied to this, in Kundalini yoga, there's a lot of talk about the neutral mind.
Okay.
And you don't access the neutral mind. You have to come to the heart and above to access the neutral mind. And what the from this perspective, the Kundalini perspective, the neutral mind is the mind, the part of us that assesses the danger in a situation and the positive and negative aspects and then brings it back, and then you proceed without judgment. You assess realistically what you're up against, but you're not in judgment of it.
Exactly. You just reminded me of a story. I reading Carlos Castaneda's books, his first book, about a Yaqui way of knowledge. When he first met or came in contact with Don Juan, this brujo, or this Mexican shaman, wizard, he asked him about a certain question about how he would deal with a certain aggressive situation. And the idea was that if you're walking out there in the desert and there's somebody out there that wants to hurt you, what would you do? Don Juan answered, I simply wouldn't be there. So then he kept going and he kept pushing it and pushing it. Well, what if he was hidden and you couldn't see him? I wouldn't be there. What if, and you didn't even know, you know, and he kept pushing this whole rational, lower rational, duality, fight or flight types of scenarios that we are constantly enmeshed in. And Don Juan kept saying, I just wouldn't be there. And the idea is that, like, from his perspective, he would follow his higher mind, his heart mind, and it would just naturally guide him away from all danger.
He would never even manifest it.
He would never even manifest it. It's what I call like the Tao of Magoo. And I don't know if we remember the cartoon series, the Mr. Magoo cartoon series with Jim Backus as the voice. Myopic old man who was always happy, and he get in his car or whatever, and he'd walk or drive through this world where there was all these dangers. He'd get ready to drive off a cliff, and then a huge I-beam would come along. The car would go right on that I-beam, and it would keep moving around, and it'd swing around, and as he was getting ready to get off the I-beam, because he couldn't see where he was going, all of a sudden he'd come to the other side, and he'd drive right off on the other side. The guy was essentially blind, but what he was blind to, he was blind to third-dimensional realities. He was blind to aggression, survival, and his heart was working, and he was, you know, he was having a good time, and he was laughing and just enjoying life. So he saw through his third eye what was really happening, and it protected him. And that's kind of what this whole idea, the third eye, is probably connected with the heart. There's a very direct connection from the heart to the prefrontal cortex that bypasses the spinal cord and all of the mechanisms within the brain that separates out different impulses. So the third eye is a function of heart wisdom.
Perfect. Yeah, and I think that that wisdom that you're talking about is a wisdom that we are being awakened to. And I think circumstances come into our life to let us practice what it means to be coming from the heart. And this is really a cool concept, Robert, because when we are seeing in our world aggression and survival issues, we know it's a sign to us that we're not in our hearts, that we are manifesting from the egoic mind, and we've created this holograph that we may not want to be creating anymore. And I think that this would be a good time to wrap it up. What do you want to talk about next time?
Well, I think next time we hinted at masculine and feminine duality, first man, first woman. Now maybe it's time to, like next time, take it down into gender roles, who we are as men and women and how we start to approach that. From an astrological perspective, not necessarily an individual astrological perspective, but a more universal perspective of, say, gender roles, Cancer, Leo, that kind of stuff,
okay,
and how we deal with that.
Great. Thanks for being here, Robert. We will have Robert, I'm thinking maybe next week, but we'll confirm it off air. So, again, thank you for listening to Robert Fitzgerald, Theoretical Astrologer, and thank you for joining The World According to Velvet, live from planet Earth. Ta-ta. Bye-bye. And as Mr. Magoo would say,
Oh, you've done it again.